We're on that journey back to him, and let's be awake on the journey because he has instructed us so, and because the informed traveller who knows what he's looking at as he passes through this quite amazing landscape, really, is the real traveller who's not wasting his time. Bismillah, alhamdulillah, wa salatu wa salamu ala rasulillah, wa alihi wa sahbihi, wa man wala. The Naqshbandiya have this idea of khushdar dam, which is something like presence in every breath. Each breath is not something we can claim credit for. It's a divine gift, and we are, by the divine generosity given most of us, quite a few of them, and each breath should be ultimately a resonating with some form of khair, some recollection of the holiness which is our birthright. The qasida that we've been singing, the Turkish one, is about the heart that I have within my breast, which is saying Allah, Allah, Allah. So again, a characteristic Naqshbandi idea. The heart is carries the divine carving, the impress of the divine name. It is the mysterious seat of the Ruh, which is that part of the human composite which incomprehensibly the angels could bow down to. The rest of us is just kind of mucky clay, nice for a few youthful years perhaps, but soon gravity takes over and it wends its inevitable way to the grave. But the part of us that is not subject to gravity, which has wings, is the imperishable spirit. And it is that which is what we really are, rather than the false self, which is what we think we are. So if we're in a session now called Reflections, we need to think about what that means. The idea in the hadith that the believer is the mirror of the believer, mir'atul mu'min, in other words, a reflection. A reflection of ourself. Well, if we are just the lower turbulent self, that is likely to be, by the usual human osmosis, the impulses that we bring out in the other. And you can see this in most human contexts nowadays, almost all, not least in debates in the House of Commons. Not much spiritual flying going on there. It's ego against ego. Expression of greed against expression of greed, the exchange of anxieties, not much fun. But the believer tries to remember that beneath this false self, that is in a sense what we are, but is also an illusion, a very strange paradox, what we really think I am, the self, I am myself, evidently. It's a kind of trap and an illusion. And that there is something else that I can discern, but only through engaging with others. I can't really lock myself away and work it out, except for the one in a million solitary type of saint, but that is hardly to be found nowadays, and that is itself only a temporary stage. The Ghar Hira, the cave of Hira, which preceded prophecy. It didn't trigger prophecy, but it preceded it. But it wasn't repeated during prophecy. Instead, we have the principle of khalwat dar anjuman, solitude in the crowd, which sounds a bit depressing. Aren't we intersubjective creatures? Don't we want to reach out and engage and hug each other and be part of the world? Isn't Islam a social religion, a deen mu'amala? Why be alone? It's a realization, more than an instruction, really, that we are alone, and that every human collectivity, including this, is made up of solitary entities. However, it is the divine decree that in the mutual engagement of egos, a kind of fire is generated. In the engagement of arwah, where that occasionally happens, and it's always there to a very small extent at least, light can be generated and some kind of secret can be discerned. Affinities become evident. The mystery of al-arwah junudun mujannada, the spirits are mustered souls, are mustered armies. Those which knew each other find an affinity. Those which did not know each other are repelled from each other. It's a hadith, which is one of the most mysterious of hadiths and refers to, most evidently, the time when we were together in a more fully interactive state at the day of Alastu bi Rabbikum, am I not your Lord? The primordial covenant, the original congregation, when everybody faced the Qibla without a single exception and things were appropriate, right, meet, as they should be, human beings. Ibadallahi ikhwana, slaves of God as brethren, the normal, normative, primordial state of human beings. In this world, we tend not to experience that, but sometimes there are affinities, and sometimes there are instinctive mutual dislikes, and this is part of our experience in our human journey. You immediately take to some people, and you immediately feel a dislike to some others, and this is a subtle thing, and much of ethics is about overcoming that and maintaining an equilibrium with everybody. But in those affinities, sometimes there can be discernible some form of transcendence, and this is what the believer seeks. That's why he is alone in the crowd, not being distracted by the crowdiness of it, but still aware of himself and seeing where the signs of transcendence might be. The world is pretty interesting. Human beings are even more interesting. There is no context that is not full of objects of study and fascination and inspiration for the believer. The believer should, even if in a dreary, crowded place like an airport terminal, be filled with delight at the spectacle of the forms of humanity, all of whom, once said Bala Shahidna, yes, we bear witness, even if now they're distracted with their handheld devices, but all of them created for a noble end and sculpted by the benign hands of Ar-Rahman. This is what the believer sees, and this is the teaching of the Shahid, the witness. Every human being is one of the Shuhada, bear witness. Every human being has inscribed within him or herself the divine qualities, all of the divine qualities, although in ourselves we get the balance wrong, and many of them are veiled, and in some cases they may not be evident at all, but they are all there because the ruh is there, which is where these qualities come together. And therefore every human being is shahid, witness, more than the beauties of the other orders of creation. We can be inspired by trees or the sounds of birds or the waves of the ocean and the other things that bring about a strange nostalgic calm in the soul. And all of this is good, and the Quran urges us quietly with the lub, the inner core of ourselves, to ponder these signs, la ayatin li ulil albab. And as we saw yesterday, our ibadah tends to be geared to natural forms and rhythms, so that at the particular atmospheric moment of Fajr, there is a particular type of prayer, and we are aesthetically and spiritually engaged with the particular spirituality of creation at a particular time. But with Bani Adam, with human beings, it is more complex and more interesting. A tree or the rising sun can manifest some of the divine names, you could say strength or even light or whatever. But only human beings can manifest all of the divine qualities, albeit, of course, not in an infinite way, that is God's alone, but in a kind of wonky, very limited, very finite way. But they can be present. Only a human being can be just and merciful, as well as strong and bright. These ethical qualities of divinity are reflected in human beings, and that is the secret of human beings as being potentially the Qibla of the angels, which is a deep secret. So in moments of stillness in the crowd, as we, clutching our boarding passes, head for the gate, instead of allowing the busyness and the aimlessness of everything to become our state, we should try and stop to look at the miracle of the human family. All of them from Adam, we are part of a single family. Everybody is our relative. We all come from the same rather humble point of origin in this world. Our parents came together, we were fetuses, we were born screaming. We are all the same kind of thing. We are all in this together. And to see what we can discern by way of divine indicativity. Wherever there is goodness or beauty or tenderness or patience, that is interesting to us. A mother looking after her child, a child looking for its parent, old people struggling, whatever it might be, there is always something of human interest there. And that can be our teke, our zawiya. We don't really have this idea of a secular space in Islam, because the earth belongs to God. There is nowhere where his operations are not proceeding without any impediment. Every space is part of God's place of prostration for human beings, and this is part of the meaning of وَجُعِلَتْ لِيَ الْأَرْضُ مَسْجِدًا, which doesn't just mean the whole world is a mosque so I can pray wherever I want, but also that the whole earth is a place of prostration for everything. كُلُّ لَهُ قَانِتُونَ, everything in the heavens and the earth, as the Qur'an says, and as it says in Surah Ar-Rahman, which we heard the other day, the stars and the trees prostrate. Everything is submitting. Everything is prostrate. And the believer, particularly the believer in this tariqah Muhammadiyya way, is the one who sees that or who strives to see it. Everything subject and submitted in every instant to the divine command, to the divine creation. Everything is, in its inner true nature, appropriateness. Even if we, with our half-blindness, don't really see that and are full of grumbles, but everything is as it should be at the deepest ontological level, submitted to God. And we need to remember that and force ourselves to remember it, because the whole project of the modern world is to get us not to think about that, but to look at the surface of things. And when we look within ourselves, which is done only very occasionally and in a self-serving way by the mechanisms of modernity, what do I want to eat for breakfast today, that kind of thing, or what fragrance should I buy duty-free? It's that kind of looking within, consulting the nafs in every case. We need to recognize that that is a search for the full self and a fool's errand, because that full self usually encourages us to things that soon turn to ash in our mouth and disappear. Even if it tastes good, you'll forget it in an hour's time. You thought you needed it so much. And if it tastes bad, well, even worse. It's dunya. It is a kind of trick in many ways. That the aspect of dunya that is dunya that lures us looks from afar as if it's really gorgeous, but in fact the more people get into it, the mental health problems amongst the super rich in London have been reported recently, it doesn't really deliver on its own promises. The shaitan promises you only ghurura, delusion, misguidedness, kind of a vain dream. Oh, that's dunya. You, and here Rumi is referring to the self, the human self, as a falcon, which is quite a common metaphor in our literature. You were a royal falcon in the clutches of an old woman. The Pirizan, the old woman, is his image for dunya, for the world. From a distance, looks really gorgeous, but actually it turns out to be kind of really old, wrinkly, bad-tempered. That's dunya, but it still holds us. When you heard the falconer's drum, you went to the place which is no place. In other words, we are designed to fly, to rise. That's the real nature of ourselves, and we're trapped in a certain way, not by the flesh, nature, all of those things that Christianity often speaks about, because these are also part of the world that submits to God in his compassionate decree, but rather allowing ourselves to be trapped by the surface of things, not by the meaning of things. And so the ascent, the departure from the cage of the ribs that the heart has to attempt, is just a kind of metaphor. It stays put, as it does with the awliya and the anbiya. It stays put and just achieves a proper equilibrium and an appropriate relationship between outward and inwards. But the falconer's drum, well, that's dhikrullah. Not just sitting around in a circle with the white-bearded, twinkly-eyed sage and singing beautiful Moroccan qasa'id, the way we think of it as having to happen, but any recollection of God, even this recollection of the shawahid, the other fellow human beings, our brothers and sisters at the departure gate, this is also a place that's full of dhikrullah. There should be no time where we believe him not to be fully evident, because he is always al-batin, where is God? But he is also zahir, manifest in everything through the unimpeded interaction and the splendor of his attributes. So we need to be people who recognize, even in our highly artificial age, when the air we breathe is somehow not real, when the materials that we touch are at some removes from their natural source, when human beings seem to be living according to rhythms that are far from what the human organism is designed for, and everything is anxious and out of kilter and on a helter-skelter race for something. Everybody's in a hurry, but what's the final destination? That's anxious. If you're spending your life and your money racing for something, and the civilization is headed towards no kind of ideal except maximizing desires and the rights of the self, no wonder people are anxious. Antidepressant sales reached an all-time high in the UK last year. So much for life, happiness, and so forth. So all of these enlightenment ideals, people are shaky. So this is the ghurur that the shaitan promises us, all of that stuff in duty-free that promises that you'll feel better about yourself. It's all just his transparent lie. Inna kayda shaitani kana da'ifa. The devil's ruse is always weak, but humanity falls for it because, it looks good and the advertising is cool, and what else is there to do after all, waiting for the flight? So as we disperse, let's try and remember this, and remember that religion always, even though it is necessarily severe about the consequences of harming others and moral infraction and turning away deliberately from the light, that religion is based on a vision of creation as the work of God's mercy. That kataba ala nafsihi ar-rahma, he has prescribed mercy upon his own self. He doesn't say that of any other quality. The Creator describes himself as ar-Rahman before using any other name. The world has been created out of mercy. The Holy Prophet, alayhi salatu wasalam, is sent as a mercy to the worlds, its mercy from start to end. And there are the darker bits in our lives. These are the shadows. The light is there. The light is God's light, which is the ontological reality of everything. Nuru samawati wal ard. He is light of the heavens and the earth. But there's the shadows as well, the zulumat. Well, that's just necessary as part of the process of farq, differentiation. If there is to be any kind of differentiation at all, there has to be gradations in the light. There have to be shadows, and we human beings, like the victims of Plato's cave, kind of think the shadows are what it's all about. But the shadows have no real causal relationship to each other, and they don't sustain themselves. Everything in creation is just absolutely in every instant dependent upon the divine light, whose shadow it differentiates. الله ولي الذين آمنوا يخرجهم من الظلمات إلى النور. One of the functions of the divine name, Al-Wali, the protecting friend, perhaps, is that he takes those who have iman, secure confidence, better than faith, secure confidence and awareness of how things are, out of the shadows into the light. Always in Allah's book, shadows are in the plural. Light is singular. Light is a divine name. So it's one thing, it can't really chop it up and put it in different places. Light is light. It's the great symbol. But the world is the shadows. Mm-hmm. So Allah takes those who have iman out of believing in the shadows into the light. Mm-hmm. So you look at the same things, you see what every other human eye perceives in creation, you hear what every other human ear perceives in creation, but in a radically different way. Through iman, you don't just see the shadows, but you see the light that is differentiated in the form of the shadows, and that's the journey of faith, that's the ikhraj that the Qur'an is speaking about, and that's the process of moving towards the divine compassion in his self-manifestation as Al-Wali, the protecting friend, which is one of the most precious for human beings of the divine names, because without that dimension of Godhead in this tremendous, terrifying, vast creation full of black holes and extreme temperatures and human mortality, things would be unbearable for us, but it's sustained and made palatable for us and sweet by the divine wilaya, by Allah as Al-Wali. So we need to orient ourselves towards that. And he is always oriented towards us. The Qibla is always there, but we're not always there for the Qibla. We're kind of interested in other stuff. So there's ghafla and there's dhikr. There is heedlessness, forgetting stuff, like a little child, short attention span. Pay attention, oh, look, there's a doggy. Pay attention, oh, look at the birdie. That's one of the aspects of human beings when we're kind of new and unformed. And we need the discipline so that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala calls us and we hear the drum of the falconer, and it's only there for our mercy. He's calling us lima yuhyikum, to what gives you life. Everything else is kind of somnolent, anaesthetized, half real, not fully present in the moment, so kind of almost dead, like sleep. And naum akhul maut, sleep is the brother of death. That's a third of your life gone right there. But much of your so-called waking hours, you're in a kind of autopilot, driven usually by the vague and hopeless turbulences of the inarticulate lower self. Ooh, I think I'll have another slice of bread and jam, and ooh, I think I'll call my sister, and ooh, and there's hardly any real directedness there, and that's a kind of death as well, this ghafla. We have to awaken from that ghafla, from that heedlessness, because Allah is calling us to be alive, preternaturally conscious of the moment, truly aware of the miraculous, in the true sense of the word, nowness of everything that is, the perfect rightness of the actual. Or as the Ghazalians say, لَيْسَ فِي الْإِمْكَانِ أَبْدَعُ مِمَّا كَانِ. There's nothing possible more amazingly beautiful and perfect than that which is. We might object and say, well, what about smallpox and syria? There's the divine majesty as well as the divine gentleness. There are the shadows as well as the light, and that's a consequence of differentiation. If the light is to be differentiated in the being of the world, they have to be beings, however contingent, muhdath, provisional, unreal, khayali they might seem to be, in that we're in with them, we have to engage with them and go through the motions as if cause and effect was something real, as if the relationship between the shadows was just what it seems to be. Allah is the real source, and Allah is the ground of being, and Allah is the author of time, and is ad-dahr, and is our place of origin and return. Al-mabda' wal-ma'ad. And we're on that journey back to him, and let's be awake on the journey because he has instructed us so, and because the informed traveller who knows what he's looking at as he passes through this quite amazing landscape, really, is the real traveller who's not wasting his time, who's not constantly checking texts or fantasizing or daydreaming. Oh, if only I'd done that. Oh, maybe I'll do that one day. And all of these chatters that jump around in the head like monkeys that take us away from the irreplaceable sanctity of the moment. All that has to be fought with, as Imam al-Junaid says, the red sword of Mujahada. You don't compromise in that battle because those things are putting you to sleep. They want you comatose. The devil wants you to close your eyes, and Allah wants you to be awake and alive. So inshallah, on this little journey, 3 days here at West Lexham, we have experienced a little bit of that, and perhaps also we've experienced something of the sweet seriousness of the spiritual path. It requires effort, as do the prayers, as does the fast, as do the forms of religion, but they bring with them a nourishment for the spirit that, despite our semi-comatose, glutted state, we perceive and we envy those who have more of it and are living more naturally in it. So may Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala take us out of the mud of our own selfhood and help us to spread our wings as royal falcons and to return not by our merit or by our power but by his compassion back to our place of origin and return and to be resurrected inshallah amongst those who have already made that journey. And may Allah grant us all a safe and blessed return and give some of the barakat of this retreat to our hearts and to our loved ones in a way that is lasting inshallah. Barakallahu feekum wal afu minkum wa assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Cambridge Muslim College, training the next generation of Muslim thinkers.